From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made early Saturday morning on Pennsylvania Avenue in Rochester. Rochester police say an invitation-only party grew to a gathering of more than 100 people. And as the evening progressed, an argument broke out, and then shots were fired. Two young people, Jaquela Young and Jarvis Alexander, both 19 years old, were killed. Police say they were not the intended targets in the fight. They were innocent victims who lost their lives after attending a party with a few friends. 14 other people were wounded in this tragedy. It is one of the worst mass shootings in Rochester's history, and it comes 5 years after three people were killed in a mass shooting outside the Boys and Girls Club on Genesee Street. Anti-gun violence advocates and city leaders have spent years addressing the issue in Rochester. Organizations like Rise Up Rochester, Rock for Peace, and Moms Demand Action have worked to empower the community to establish a nonviolent culture. Rochester City Council Vice President Willie Lightfoot has called gun violence in Rochester a pandemic on its own and has led efforts to eradicate gun violence through the Rock Against Gun Violence Coalition. The work of these groups and many others is ongoing. So where do we go from here? What can we learn from this tragedy? Our guests this hour share their perspectives and their recommendations for a city that is already hurting from the death of Daniel Prude and the pandemic. And I'd like to welcome our guests now. Deb Antoniadis is a volunteer with Moms Demand Action in Rochester. Deb, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Evan, for having this important conversation. And I'm looking forward to discussing it with the other guests.
Yeah, Serena Cotton is one of those guests, founder of Rock the Peace, who lost her son Christopher to violence in 2007. Serena, welcome. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Justin Morris is a community activist who does a lot of work in a lot of different circles and, frankly, a role model for a lot of young people and probably has a lot to say about what young people might be thinking and feeling right now. And Justin, I'm grateful for the time. Thanks for coming back with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Let me ask all three of you just for your opening thoughts about as you got the news this past weekend. Deb, I'll start with you. What goes through your mind when you hear about not only another mass shooting, two young people, 19 years old, dead, 14 more wounded?
Evan, you did mention one statistic, but it's even more sobering when I read that this is the fourth largest mass shooting in the country this year. So we know we have work to do. Moms Demand Action, for those who don't know, is the largest grassroots volunteer network in the country working to end gun violence. We have over 6 million supporters, and we have chapters in every state in the country, but we know we still have work to do. We look forward to partnering with community gun violence groups here in Rochester, which many people know well. One, of course, is Rock the Peace, and another is Rise Up Rochester. So we will do everything we can to support our community, which has gone through a tremendous amount of pain, not only with the death of Daniel Prude, but it has been worsened by the daily gun violence that we've seen for years.
Serena, how did this news hit you this weekend?
With me, every time I have a young person being hurt or murdered, it always takes me back to 2007 when my baby Christopher was shot and killed. The feelings always come back, and then when you find out it's someone that you know or is close to, it's even worse. I personally haven't slept. You know, I've been praying and praying and praying for the families and put together a prayer circle on Saturday for community partners to come out. And I mean, it's just, it's so hurtful, you know, to know all of these young folks were hurt and two were killed.
How much, Serena, does it bring back your own loss to you when you hear these kinds of stories?
It actually takes you back to the day. It takes you back to the day, back to that moment back to the moment when the doctor said your baby didn't make it. It takes you way back there, and all of those feelings just come out all over again. So every time a young person is killed, I get those feelings over and over and over again. I mean, we go out, we call it walk, talk, and pray. Well, we go out into the community. We've been going out since June, and we do this each year where we walk the city streets. We talk to the community and neighbors and whoever need or want prayer, we pray for them. And we try to, you know, give out resources and try to bring, you know, the folks in that need help or want to get off the streets. We send them, we give them the information to assist with that. Hmm.
Justin Morris, how did you take the news this weekend?
I'm like, there's no way that this is real. You know, the initial numbers I was hearing, I'm like, this can't be real. So immediately I got up and I went over to the scene. And on the scene, I began to get more accurate numbers. And the realization actually struck me then of what was occurring. And then, you know, I went to Strong, and then we went to me and Anthony Hall. We went over to Rochester General. And it was actually some young people being released both at Strong and at General when we were arriving. And just having those conversations, it's just you never can prepare yourself for something of this magnitude. And even right now, it still seems surreal as to what just occurred. But in the coming days, one of the things that I noticed is I didn't see any major media outlets out on the scene or anything like that. And it just baffled me that we just had a very large shooting involving very young people, and it's not national news. You know what I mean? So I don't know if they showed up in recent days, but I know as the last few days that I've been out there, I haven't seen any national coverage. But yeah, the day that it happened, it was just it was surreal. It's like you can't even put a emotion or reaction to hearing something like that.
So can I ask you, Justin, I don't really even know how to ask this because there's not an easy answer here, but what is at the base of all of this hurt, and you know, what would drive someone to do this? And I mean, everybody wants to sort of give some kind of revelation, like it's a you know, like there's a singular answer and that one wise person will figure it all out. But certainly someone like yourself has more experience working across this community than many, many others. And I think your insight's important here. Now, what's happening here? You know, what is in your mind as to what drives this kind of event?
I think there's a total disconnection from a whole generation of young people. And I say that because we're approaching this pandemic with solutions that we feel is going to work, and the young people right now aren't receptive to the solutions that we're putting forth. So when you see instances like this, this is just a manifestation of all of the trauma, of all of the occurrences that these young people have seen happen and have had happen throughout their lives, and it's a total disregard for human life. When you have a young person or, you know, whoever the shooter was, just fire into a crowd of people, there's a desensitized emotion that they're relating with, you know, video games and different things of that nature. And shooting in the crowd, for them, it's not registering to them that, okay, you're going to kill somebody and you're going to hurt a lot of people. So for me, there's a total desensitization to human life, you know.
Serena, what do you think is at the base of this?
These young folks need love. And just talking to young people and being out there with them, they need love. A lot of them grew up at homes where, you know, there's drugs. And some grew up in good homes and they're still doing stuff. But they need love. They need us to talk with them, not at them. Talk to them and not at them. They need us to learn how to listen and to learn how to let them know how to not tell them when I was your age, this, that, and the other, because times are totally different now. So the most part is listening to them. They're going through so much. They're seeing so many of their friends, their age, being killed and being hurt and sent to prison and things like that, more so than it was when we were their age. So they're going through so many more, so much more than we've been through. And it's just a point of showing them love, showing that we care, showing them that it is a better way. There's a way out of the lifestyle that they're in and things like that. And just like Justin said, these video games, majority of them are about killing. So, I mean, it's a lot that comes in play with everything.
Deb, what do you think?
I certainly would defer to your two other guests, but I hope I can support what they're suggesting with data. We're a data-driven organization, and that's one of our strengths. And early data has shown that not only COVID-19, but ongoing gun violence take a disproportionate toll on Black and brown communities. And the underlying reason is very clear. Decades of underinvestment in these neighborhoods have created environments in which public health epidemics thrive. In fact, 36,000 Americans, let that number sink in, are killed every day in the United States with guns. Approximately one-third of those deaths are firearm homicides. This is why we support candidates, we're very busy doing that now, who will support our policies of safe storage, background checks on all gun sales, red flag, so-called red flag laws, which are emergency protection orders. But we do want to strengthen across the country our partnerships with countless community groups that are dedicated to ending gun violence.
Listeners, if you want to share your thoughts on what happened this past weekend or the path forward, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. It's 263-9994. Or you can email the program connections at WXXI.org. I want to read two very different comments. One comes from a listener named Michael who says, Evan, a big part of the problem is that someone can drive to a state like Virginia and buy enough Glock 45 caliber semi-automatic pistols with 19 bullets in the magazine and come back to Rochester and sell them to criminals. It's the kind of pistol that was used when one person shot 8 people in the Gates pub. So that's from Michael, whereas WXXI's Randy Gorman reported this weekend that Rochester Police Captain Frank Umbrino had a very different view. Here's what Police Captain Umbrino of the Rochester Police Department said this weekend. Quote, if I hear one more politician talk about what we need to do to stop the violence and we need more gun laws, we need this, we need that, quite frankly, I'm going to vomit. These people that say that have no idea what they're talking about. You have individuals getting locked up for illegal handguns and being released from custody the next day. That's disgusting. How does that happen? That's from Rochester Police Captain Frank Umbrino. Deb, I'll start with you on this one. Moms Demand has been working on a lot of these issues. How do you see these are very two different comments there from Michael and then from Captain Umbrino. What do you make of those?
I've definitely heard them before, as you might expect. I will just keep repeating ad nauseum, to continue with that metaphor, that gun laws save lives. This is why our campaigns are for new and stronger solutions to lax gun laws and loopholes that jeopardize the safety of our families. We all want to keep our families safe. I guess that's at the heart of everything that we do. And it is true that New York State has very strong gun laws. We are fortunate for 9 bills that were passed in 2019. But we don't have strong national laws, and we do see an influx of illegal guns from other neighboring states. And that's part of the problem, definitely.
Justin Morris, can I ask you what you make of those two very different comments from listeners, including the Rochester police captain?
Well, the first statement has a lot of validity. You know, wherever there's harsh gun laws, people are going to find a way to get them in. And being that Virginia is literally a 5 to 6 hour drive, and then you have Georgia, which are two of the biggest hubs of getting firearms into the state of New York. We're going to continue to see that type of action going on with bringing those guns into the community. There has to be some type of legislation and law about, you know, transporting over state lines and different things like that to deter people from doing so. I know that there are bills in place and things of that nature, but we definitely need stricter bills to keep these guns out of communities like our community. And as for what the captain said in his press conference, I really don't think he's concerned about the guns. I really think his statement was really centered in his anger and frustration about, you know, just the state that RPD is in now, because he kind of retracted later on in his statement, if you listen to the whole statement. So I think he's really just letting out his frustration, how he feels about everything that's going on, because it was very inappropriate, because it showed no empathy, no sympathy at all for what he was giving a press conference about. Anybody that can stand up there and speak in that regard to the situation at hand, it was disgusting, and it showed no character by him. But I don't think it was centered in him, you know, defending, you know, not moving forward with stricter gun laws. I think it was just really centered in him having a platform to express how he feels overall right now with everything going on. I didn't look at that as lending any credibility to the situation. I looked at it solely as him using this platform to just express his feelings and how he feels about the people at the center of making decisions in our community right now. So I don't even think it really had anything to do with the guns.
Okay. Serena Cotton, what do you think of the police captain's comments and this debate about, you know, whether we should be talking about gun laws?
I'm glad Justin advised that there was a extra comment, because the comment that you spoke on, that's the only part I heard. So mm-hmm. I'm glad he did clean it up, because I heard that part and was like, okay, wow. But as far as the gun laws and everything like that, I mean, so many people, so many candidates want to do the same thing. So as far as the locked guns and things like that, as far as bringing the guns in, that's, to me, that's where the problem is, because it's so easy for folks to get a gun, and it's scary knowing that.
I want to also read a comment from a listener who is challenging the idea that gun laws, you know, really ought to be part of a conversation in response to this. Charles writes and says, you can't blame this on the NRA. You can't blame it on people who like modern sporting rifles. You can't blame it on people who support the Second Amendment. The blame can only be placed on people who have been allowed to flout COVID restrictions without consequence and people who choose to act irresponsibly with firearms. Given the way the media conducts themselves when a shooting doesn't fit their narrative, I'm shocked you're even devoting the hour to this. That's from Charles. So let me just address the last point, and then I'll turn it over to our guest to respond to Charles' comment there. I'm thinking of the governor of Kentucky, Governor Beshear, who talked about the pandemic, and he said that the way we're going to beat the pandemic is with kindness, a national plan of kindness, kindness to one another, love to one another. Masking is kindness. That's love. Being careful with our actions and thinking about who might be impacted and being sympathetic when people are hurting and not mocking others and really being sympathetic to those who are hurting because they're worried about losing their jobs and their livelihoods. A national plan of kindness is what it's going to take to beat the pandemic. Now, what about something like gun violence? I mean, that sounds maybe Pollyanna to say a national plan of kindness. So I maybe won't go as far on gun violence, but I will say this. Charles, when you send an email like that, you know, mocking the media, mocking people, what has gotten into people? I mean, nobody wants people to be hurting. Nobody wants to see shootings. And everybody wants to see a more peaceful world, period. That's it. Whatever you perceive the media trying to come for your guns or take away your rights, I cannot believe, with two people shot and killed and 14 others wounded, the first thing you want to do is send an email and mock the media and say, you can't blame this one on your regular punching bags. Come on, man. Like, can we be kinder to one another? Does the media get things wrong sometimes? The media is not a monolith. I get things wrong. I'm wrong a lot. My mind is open to new evidence. My mind is open to what will work. That's why I called Justin and Deb and Serena. That's why we wanted them on this program. But my mind is not open to those who just want to mock and try to score political points when people have just died. If you think that the typical proposed solutions don't work, let's have a conversation. If you want to sit here and mock others over a keyboard, you are part of the problem. I want to talk about what might work here. Now, Charles is making a point, Deb, and I know Mom's Demand, you just said you think gun laws save lives. Charles's point is he doesn't see anything that you're proposing that would have made a difference in this case, not in this one. Do you disagree?
Wow. I guess I would have to. Statistics don't lie. Our organization, all programming, everything we do is data-driven, as I indicated before. I'm sorry, but gun laws do save lives. Safe storage saves lives. Background checks save lives. A national red flag law would save lives. Unfortunately, bills related to things like this, while they were passed by the House months and months ago, are sitting on the majority leader's desk in the Senate. So perhaps things won't get done as quickly as we would like, but we consider ourselves a movement, not a moment, and we will keep going. We're actually two, I think our group is often misrepresented as a group of white suburban housewives who drink box wine. We call ourselves a group of mothers and others. We have rural supporters. We have city supporters. We certainly have suburban moms. We have gun owners. We have supporters who don't own guns. So we are really a well-rounded group. We do think that's our strength if we hope to solve the gun epidemic, which we truly do have in this country. And we've seen that in our own community, sadly.
Is there one piece of legislation that is within reach that you think is going to make an impact in swift order if it passes, Deb?
Oh, that's a tough one, Evan. as I say, in New York State, we're very fortunate with the gun laws that we do have, inclusive of the SAFE Act and those bills I mentioned that were passed last year. In addition, we're a prohibition on 3D printing of firearms would certainly be helpful. It's just a continual to fight to keep our families safe. That's all we're trying to do.
Justin Morris, what do you make of Charles saying you can't blame this one on the NRA, you can't blame it on people who like modern rifles, can't blame it on those who support the Second Amendment? It's the fault of people who aren't responsible with guns.
It's exactly what it is. It's an attempt to create a narrative that a group of people really want to drive. It shows, once again, the lack of empathy that people have as it relates to black and brown lives being murdered in the streets. I guarantee you his tone would have been a lot different had this occurred to someone that looks like him. I think that, you know, in his statement, he's saying you can't blame all of these people, but actually you absolutely can, because no gun is made illegally. You know what I mean? There are guns that are manufactured and they're distributed illegally. So when you talk about the types of guns that these crimes are happening with, these aren't illegally made guns. They're illegally distributed guns. So when you talk about that, you have to acknowledge the fact that all of these guns were most likely once owned by people who had gun license and different things of that nature. So when he makes a statement like that, even in his statement, it holds no validity, because for one, he doesn't know where these guns came from. And for two, the ill intent is written all throughout his statement. So stuff like that, in this season, I'm kind of just, ignoring stuff like that, because it's too much work to be done as opposed to just sitting back and harping on, what's being said and the message of hate that's going forward by a certain group of people. I think his statement has no validity. I think that all the parties that he named are absolutely responsible in each one of these cases. I think that as the other listeners stated, that, there's absolutely legislation that has to get passed in order to make communities like ours safer. We do have very strict gun laws, but until we address the ability to go from state to state and purchase these firearms and get them back into these communities, we're just spinning the wheel right now.
So let me ask you then, Justin, what you see in the way of leadership locally. I mean, the mayor this weekend talked about the hurt that people are suffering, the way that hurt sometimes manifests, what's going to be required in terms of personal accountability, what is required in community leadership. Where do you see leadership coming from? Do you see it in the mayor? Do you see it in other sources in this community?
I have a very strong stance in how much I don't support our local government. But I think me talking about that right now would kind of take away from the situation at hand. I really don't want to.
Let me reframe it in a way that respects that your position there.
Okay.
Where do you see the kinds of leadership that will, because the way I'm hearing our guest describe this problem, it is a multifaceted problem, but at the core of it is a community where there is a lot of hurt, suffering, anguish for mm-hmm. a lot of different reasons, poverty, pain, loss of hope, sometimes desensitization. There's all kinds of things. What will, apart from what has to be done systemically, which means more opportunity, more of an actual path towards a sustainable future that everyone needs, what's the kind of leadership that will help younger people make the kinds of decisions that will avoid these kind of tragedies? I mean, who's going to provide that leadership, and where is it going to come from, Justin?
Well, I guess there's no way around it. It's definitely not going to come from this administration. We've seen time and time again situations like this occur, and there be no real tangible solutions put forth in order to stop the violence in the community. Serena knows I love her to death, and I love what she does in the community, and she's one of probably three people that can call me, and I'll come out and support what they got going on. But and she knows how I feel about this administration as well. I just don't see it happen with this administration. We really need progressive leaders put in place to really attack what we face here systemically, structurally, in our community. And it's unfortunate that in a community where the leaders are majority black and brown, that we're having this conversation. I think that we really, 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 really have to explore putting people in place that know policy. We're talking about a lot of people that are in place in key positions that that have no clue about policy. We got a bill in the county ledge that can't get passed right now by Ernest Flagger because it's poorly written. And it's a vital bill, and it speaks upon having people to be able to lock up those firearms and hold them accountable when those fire alarms are taken and different things like that, if they're not properly stored. But we can't even get that bill out of county ledge because we can't get somebody to write it right. And when you have representation and leadership like that in our community, and we're continually supporting that because we continue to put these people in office, we got to go in a different direction. You have a mayor who won't acknowledge that there's a gang problem in the city of Rochester, which there's a gross gang problem in the city of Rochester. We have a reactive city council who don't want to put forth no real solutions on how to combat violence in the community. They only want to put forth solutions on how to respond to violence in the community. We have a police department that's not progressive in how to prevent crime from happening, only how to react to it. We were just getting ready to put up $16 million to build a police station in our community instead of investing in tangible things that can deter violence in different demographics in our community. So when we talk about that particular situation, you know, I can go on and on for days about what needs to happen. But as it stands right now, you know, that I truly, truly believe that everybody's caught up on putting Band-Aids on gaping wounds. Okay, this happened. I don't know if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't heard a formal press conference from Lovely Warren in regards to this situation. I'm pretty sure there may be one out there. I may just be drowned out by everything that's going on with Daniel Prue, but I haven't heard a press conference in regards to this situation from our mayor. I'm pretty sure there may be one out there. I just haven't heard it. And it's not being pushed in the media like that if there is. But, I'm most upset with local government in regards to situations like this because I've been at the table many times where you have influential people in the community, and because they don't agree with certain individuals politically, their voice gets drowned out.
Talking to Justin Morris, Serena Cotton, Deb Antoniadis, who are all with us this hour, responding to what happened this past weekend. And I just realized it's already 12:40. I have to take our only break of the hour. And then when we come back, we've got a lot more feedback from listeners. Let's go ahead and take that only break, and we'll get that feedback and have a lot more from our guests coming up. Coming up in our second hour, Joan London joins us, the new host of Second Opinion. Joan London, of course, the longtime anchor for ABC's Good Morning America. She has a new broadcast career in front of her. She's in Rochester for filming this week of Second Opinion, the new season that comes your way this winter. We're going to talk about what they're working on and how this all came together with the great Joan London next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get back to your phone calls, and I'm going to start with Pat in Rochester. Go ahead, Pat.
Yes, sir. Well, apparently no suspects have been named at all. No one has come forth to say anything. essentially the shooters have been given a blanket of immunity. You can blame the government all you want, but the people who were there, it's hard to believe that nobody knew who those people were. Not even anonymously will they come forward to identify these people.
Okay, but help me understand. I mean, what are you alleging about the fact that there are no suspects, Pat?
There appears to be a code of silence where no one is willing to come forward.
Okay. Pat, thank you. Justin, does that happen sometimes? I mean, are you concerned about that?
Yeah, it happens sometimes, but that's not even the case here, and I don't even know where he's getting that information from. One of the great things I will say about RPD is when they're conducting an investigation, they're not going to tell you that they've talked to over 75 witnesses, and they actually do have a couple of suspects. So, that, I mean, you got to know what's going on before you just give out these blank narratives about what you assume is going on because of what you've seen in the past. Over 75 people have been interviewed. People have come forth and said what they've seen. I don't know where that narrative comes from that he just put out there. And we have to debunk those narratives, too, because it's absolutely anchored and based in untruth. And it's a narrative that's trying to be created about contingent upon your feelings and your emotions, Pat, because it's not true.
Okay. Serena, I heard you responded. Did you want to respond to that, too, Serena?
I was just agreeing with Justin as far as them RPD investigating. They're not going to give you all the information because it's an investigation.
Yeah, so. I take that point. Yeah, and I certainly, Pat, I appreciate the call, but I think there's a lot that I don't know about this case either. And let's see what happens here. Mark and Gates is next on the phone. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello, Evan. Just a couple of points. I think there are larger systemic issues there. Yes, I would very much favor restrictions on guns, which is not to say take away guns from sports people and what have you. But the American culture is such that, you know, if you look at our country, many other countries have far fewer deaths. We have to go with Michelle Obama. Sometimes you have to look at people's motives. This idea that we all want the same. I hear that at my church, too. And it may be true at my church, but it's not true in the community at large. We do not all want the same. When you have 26 or 27 little children killed in Newtown, Connecticut, along with the teachers. And, oh, no, we can't have any restrictions on guns, certainly. That shows that we value the guns and the violence over the people and the children. So many people do not want health care. Look at one party. The Republican Party needs to be called out. We don't have this equal thing. On the one hand, this. On the one hand, that. On the one hand, we know Dwight Eisenhower was a wonderful leader. But then again, there's Mussolini and Adolf Hitler. They were leaders, too. We need to call out the right wing. Many Americans, sadly, actually enjoy the chaos. They enjoy seeing people suffer. They enjoy seeing people live in poverty and have their houses foreclosed and have no decent income and the basics of life, while others in the oligarchy go in their unbelievably sized yachts and what have you.
Mark, I don't think people want others to hurt. I don't think you don't think conservatives are cheering for gun violence, are you?
Well, no. First, there's a difference between conservatives and right wing. I have respect for somebody like Gary Wills, who clearly can think about the issues. I don't agree with him on very many things, but he is a conservative. This whole idea of less government and this and that, you have to respect that is his point of view. But many people on the right, many people among Republicans, why have they not come up with health care? Why are they trying to gut the Affordable Care Act? the little bit of health care that people do have. Why are they trying to have no protections for people being evicted from their homes? And this is all ties in with gun violence as well. We're not talking about taking away guns. We're talking about some restrictions.
So, Mark, I got to jump in here. So there's a lot here. I mean, and look, I don't want to get derailed into defending liberals or conservatives or whatever. But the answer to your question, Mark, you got to seek honest answers. Ask conservatives why they feel that way. Generally, the answer is because they don't trust that the progressive proposed solutions will work. They think that there isn't a future in which very few people can go, can be without poverty or be in poverty. Or essentially, they feel like the proposals either don't work or strip away a freedom for individualistic striving. It's a different kind of goal and an outlook. It's not celebrating others' pain. And I'm sitting here, some people are going to email me and say you're picking sides. I'm not. I'm simply saying I don't think most Americans, no matter your ideology, are cheering anybody else's pain. I think people have different views about how we get to a better future. I do think that when it comes to guns, there are some very different opinions, and I have listeners emailing me right now saying that they think that what I'm advocating is that all gun laws must pass and that the only way to be kind, as I said earlier, is to support gun laws. That's not how I feel. I think you can be kind and oppose new gun laws in good faith, and I think we can have a debate about that. But I don't think most of the emails I'm reading from listeners, especially right-leaning listeners this hour, are kind. There is a weird glee or derision. And I just can't believe that's the emotion that we're arriving at after this kind of an incident. I mean, Justin's right. This incident is one of the top five biggest numbers of people shot at a social gathering this year, and it's Rochester. So, no, not everybody's on the same path to how we get there, but, gosh, let's maybe tone down some of the way we mock or use these kind of stories to try to score these points with each other. I don't see that. And Mark, I don't mean to be unkind. I know that you're concerned that people, as you say, on the right wing don't care. I don't know, Deb, I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, there are some very different views on gun laws. What do you make of Mark's point there?
Oh, there are. I would like to pivot back, if I may, just for a second to a point Justin made about our elected officials. Those we elect to enact laws to keep our families safe. Every Town for Gun Safety has a program whereby those campaigning for a public office, unfortunately not yet at the local level, but at the state and national level, they can fill out a questionnaire that will be sent to them and be granted a gun sense candidate status. These are individuals who will work to pass legislation that will, again, I know I've said this more than once, that will keep our families safe. That's very important.
Go ahead,
Evan. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, just a lot of emails. I mean, I just got an email saying Justin Morris should run for mayor. Laura says, Justin for mayor. I live outside of the county, but if I lived in the city, I would vote for him. What clear-sighted and clearly dedicated intentions he's expressing regarding the fate of the city. Justin, you want to break any news? Are you running for mayor?
Maybe bring up some news about city council, not mayor, though. so be looking out for some city council news real soon.
Oh, see,
not
I
mayor,
did,
though.
I did not know that. I was being sort of cheeky about whether you wanted to break any news. but I will say, Justin, that listeners are hearing the passion that you have, and frankly, I think the nuance. None of this is easy. So let me turn and let me ask all three of you. Justin, you just talked about the fact that RPD, during their investigations, they've talked to 70 people here. They're going to talk to dozens of people. They're not always going to tell the public exactly where they are in their investigations before they make an arrest. There's been a lot of talk about police reform or massive dramatic changes in policing. What do you support, and do you think there are bridges that can be built between the community and police right now, Justin?
In the beginning of this summer, I was totally against the notion of defunding the police. Through some education from Free the People Rock Adrian Hill, Anthony Hall, and several other community leaders. I am now in support of defunding the police because now I have the understanding that defunding the police doesn't mean eradicating the police. I 100% support funds that are given to RPD to go in other places to help our community in different areas that doesn't require the police to have such a strong force. I think that we are in a complete revolution in the way that we think about policing. And I think for the first time in recent American history, America is looking at policing in an alternative fashion. I'm totally for even putting forth legislation of only having officers who are responding to felony calls or felony complaints carry weapons and things of that nature. But I'm definitely for, and I definitely stand with the movement that's going forward of defunding the police. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there, and I think that in that opportunity, I think that we can build a much, much stronger community surrounding the systemic and structural issues that we deal with in our community. So I've been awakened since June as it relates to what, you know, defunding the police actually means, and I'm all for it.
Okay.
I'm not for eradicating police, but I am for defunding police in key areas in which we can progress as a community and as a society.
But we need some police in emergency response situations.
We do. Okay. We absolutely do.
Yeah. Okay. Serena, how do you see it?
The same with Justin. I was totally against defunding the police because I'm like, okay, so the police get caught all day, and you're talking about getting rid of some of the officers, and we need more officers. And then someone broke it down to me what it actually means about defunding the police. It's not per se getting rid of police officers, but putting funds where it's needed, like with mental health. And this was before Mr. Prue's coming out of Mr. Prue's death. They mentioned mental health. So like if an officer go out with a mental health person instead of just officers going out and being trained, money could go toward being training the officers on mental health. So when they do go out on a mental health call with a mental health worker, and then organizations and other things that are doing things in the community. Yes, I'm for defunding the police. I'm for right now the RPD in Rochester, the RPD is, how can I say it? People are not respecting them at this point, and we need something to bring the community and the police back together, so to say, because things I'm seeing, a lot of people are not respecting them, and some of the officers are not respecting the community. So we need money to go to those different places to do the work to bring the community back together.
Okay.
I mean...
Yeah, and let me ask Deb just briefly to weigh in, too, if you want to. Go ahead, Deb.
I do want to say that no one deserves to have a loved one's life cut short the way that Daniel Prudes was. What we feel is most important now is that his family gets the justice they deserve. We will continue to support his family and the countless groups in our city and state who are dedicated to ending gun violence. We fight against the toxic combination of systemic racism, America's gun culture, and the decades-long militarization of law enforcement. It's resulted in the tragic death of so many Americans, and particularly Black Americans.
Well, I appreciate the time of all of our guests. 30 seconds, I'm going to ask Justin Morris to close with maybe a message for the kind of message you would send to younger adults, especially the kinds of people who are at that party this weekend and maybe who are really hurting and wondering what their future holds. 30 seconds. Go ahead, Justin.
I just want to let them know that there is hope, that we will get over this. Rochester is a resilient community. They have the support of the elders. They have the support of the people of this city. They will not be in this fight alone. We have grief counseling. We have people that are dedicated to doing the work and helping them to transition and maybe not forget about this incident, but definitely be able to cope with it moving forward in life.
I'm grateful to all of our guests for their time. Justin, thanks for making the time. I know we'll talk soon.
Yes, sir.
Serena Cotton, founder of Rock the Peace. So much love and respect for you and what you do. And again, always really think about families like yours in these kind of days. Thank you, Serena. It's always good to hear you.
Thank you.
Deb Antoniadis, who's a volunteer with Moms Demand Action in Rochester. Lots to talk about in the months to come on this. Thank you, Deb. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, and let's continue the conversation.
You got it. And listeners, I know this is tough. I've read some of your emails. Some are really rough. Let's try to keep love and respect at the core of this, and I'll try to model that too. Keep pushing me on this. More connections coming up.